Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 175, recorded Friday, July 13th, 2012. I am Tim Elliott, and joining me live via IP from San Diego, California, is Steve Borsch.
How you doing, Tim? Phil? Graham?
And up the road a piece in the southern suburbs of Minneapolis is Graham Thickens.
Hello there. Happy Friday the 13th.
And just around the corner here in Lakeville is Phil Wilson.
I'd forgotten it's the Friday the 13th. Yeah, we got some real stones to be trying a Google Hangout for the first time on Friday the 13th.
We should probably address why we're doing a video podcast here on Google Plus.
Because we can.
Robert Stevens will be joining us, and he asked if we could do it. He's going to be joining from an iPad, and we're all on our MacBooks, so we'll see how this runs. We do have a full list of topics, so I guess I wanted to start out the cast with Steve. You're at Comic-Con. How's it going out there?
Oh, my God. Can I just tell you that first of all, I feel like a anorexic Victoria's Secret model out here. It's unbelievable.
So anorexia is still in full remission there.
It's incredible. But the costumes and all of that, I've been tweeting a whole bunch of pictures, but it's pretty amazing. And after I got over the crush of the fact that it's almost as though 500 high schools emptied their buses right in front of the convention center. It's just packed. But the art is incredible. I mean, it's just, the sculptures and the movie studios are here, the TV stations are here, or TV stations, TV networks. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's not, it's kind of not my thing, but my son is just, I mean, for him, this is like me going to Macworld in 1990. You look nice at every booth and so forth. And it's become a venue where movie studios and TV networks and other, vampire, this and that, they all jump in and announce big things here. And it's pretty interesting. But here's the punchline, then I'll stop with this, is there's a transition going on from print to digital in this space as well. And there's a real, there's a lot of angst amongst the artists and especially the retailers of all these, comic books and various serial sorts of books. Because these guys are making 50, 60 point gross margins on this stuff, and if it goes digital, it's gone. And so there's a lot of buzz and a lot of talk about it. Not really overt, but it's kind of under the radar. So it's interesting to see this as this enormous industry that's going through exactly the same thing everyone else is going through.
So has it really changed in the age of social media? The convention.
It really has not. I've been sort of surprised. No. And although I will tell you that I've seen more iPhones and iPads and Android phones here than anywhere else. And at one point, midpoint during the day, the connection was so horrible. I mean, I couldn't even send a photo over Twitter. One of these compressed photos. So.
Well, speaking of, I'm sharing my screen.
Yeah.
Which you can do on Hangout with a lovely picture of Darth Vader at Comic-Con. Having a smoke. So how many Princess Leias have you seen? In the gold bikini?
Well, let me tell you, there was one young woman who, if she was my daughter, I would have gone and found a coat and put it around her.
But since wasn't your daughter.
Since there wasn't a daughter, I stood there while my son took pictures.
Got a picture of her.
Hey, can I get a picture of you? Oh, sure, she says as she poses and he's snapping away.
We talked a little bit about the generalizations and really kind of a lot of the stereotypes of Comic-Con. It sounds like it's living up to it to some extent. But Steve, what are some of the things that you have seen that has been that you really have enjoyed? Have you taken any of the sessions? I mean, we see a lot of movies and TV shows and casts from them, show up at Comic-Con. Have you had a chance to do a little celebrity watching or anything?
Not really, but thanks for asking, Phil, because I went into a line, the Psych, the TV show. I don't know if you guys have ever watched that. My son turned my wife and I onto it, and I started watching it, and I really liked it. And so I thought, oh, you know, I'll go into that session. So it's maybe an hour before the ballroom session is going to happen, and the ballroom holds 4,200 people. There were probably 7,000 people in line. The guy, I go, where's he in the line? He goes, well, it's just right there down the stairs. So I go down the stairs. I go, where's he in the line? Oh, it's down those stairs. Okay, so I go down those stairs. That's where I got the picture of Darth Vader.
And having a smoke at the bottom of the stairs.
No wonder he breathes like that.
So he's on the way up. Okay, good.
That's right. And I look, and I swear to God, way down by the pond, like four city blocks away is the end of the line. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And so there's not that. That's what the popular sessions are like.
Right.
And so the ones we've gone to have been interesting ones around how to get published, you know, how to get the attention of a comic book publisher, a book publisher, a couple of art sessions. There's one that I couldn't get into, believe it or not, which was teaching with comic books. And it was a whole session, and they were talking about comic books on the iPad and adding interactivity and everything else. I couldn't get in the session. It was packed.
Teaching what?
So, well, probably literacy.
How to use your superpowers for good?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. So it was absolutely amazing. Just amazing.
And how long are you there for?
Well, we were going to leave Sunday morning, and we didn't get the Saturday pass, and that's the big day. So it's Wednesday night, the premiere. They show a bunch of movie and film premieres. We couldn't get that. 16 minutes after I tried to get tickets, it was gone.
And so we
were going to leave. We had a ticket for Sunday. We were going to leave at 12:30, and we decided to stay overnight and come back on Monday because he's desperate to have another full day. I could be done now after one day. But that's okay.
Enough. You got your picture of Princess Leia in the gold bikini. Yeah, you're good to go.
Are you seeing any other Minneapolis people out there, Steve?
Just his buddy, because his buddy's dad lives out here. His parents are divorced, and so he's out here. And so the two of them hung out for a couple hours yesterday. But I've seen nobody else that I know.
Well, how many people are there?
It's probably, well, it's well over 100,000.
Are you kidding?
Oh, no, I'm not kidding at all. Oh,
wow.
No, I mean, it's really incredible.
Is the San Diego Convention Center even big enough for that many people? It's a pretty good size.
It's pretty, but it's literally wall to wall. I mean, it's just incredible.
There aren't other
and
are there?
No. And I will tell you that this is kind of a punchline, but I'm amazed about how difficult it is to manage battery life on devices.
Yeah.
So you know, I brought my daughter gave me her Mophie juice pack for the iPad so I could juice my iPad, and then another little one for my iPhone. And my son didn't really use his much, but I was on mine a lot because I was, you know, I've still got client stuff I'm doing while I'm out here. And at one point I just said, I got to go plug in. And I went and found a plug, and I sat down while he was hanging with his buddy for a couple hours. I sat for about an hour and charged my devices. Yeah. And it really is. I mean, it's tough to manage this stuff for a full day when you're out and about.
So you can't manage a Mophie on an iPhone for a whole day.
Oh no, that's why I brought it. But the iPad itself, I mean, even turning the screen brightness down, I got down to 60%, and it was maybe 11:30. Of course, I was doing a bunch of stuff. I was emailing and I was logged into WordPress. Well, no, because I got client stuff. I gotta do. You know, they're like, hey, I gotta do this and that, and so I'm also learning about the limitations of using just a tablet.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
So being summer, there's not a whole lot of topics. So I did choose a couple to talk about. I know Robert Stevens will be joining us any time now from his hotel room in Seattle where he was speaking yesterday. So I don't know if we want to get started on these topics or if we want to save them for after, Robert.
No, I think the, you know, we can touch on Conquer. It looks like Conquer is moving into Kickstarter. And that's kind of an interesting story. Looking for $25,000 from the public, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple Kickstarter gaming types of things going on, which I thought was interesting. Conquer, of course, is a startup here in Minneapolis that Graham, I think, was the first one to talk about on the podcast.
Yep.
They do have a game, and they're trying to raise $25,000, which just started. As of yesterday, I think they had a few thousand dollars. So it just seems to me like Kickstarter is becoming more and more of a funding type of an engine for new and innovative startups like this one. And and both Concor and this other one, which I don't know how you pronounce it. I guess it's Ouya, whatever. It's a gaming console that's based on Android. That's also on Kickstarter now, and they've raised over $3 million in just a few days.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, what a great plug. Go ahead, Graham.
I was going to say hardware seems to do real well on Kickstarter.
Yeah, and Conquer is a iPad game, so it's not necessarily well, it's not any hardware; it's software.
Right. It's iPhone and Windows Phone right now, and they have an Android.
Android coming. Yeah. I noticed they're at almost $3,000 with 35 backers. Or excuse me, 49 backers. So
really,
on Kickstarter.
Well, you know what I'm amazed about is how. Kickstarter, well, what a great place to go and vet your idea in front of people. Because if nobody funds it, there was a great Skype device, which was a screen and then a long stalk and a little weight on the end. And so you could use this, you could hold it like this, or you could set it on the counter and so forth, and you could Skype with it. And the device was going to be like $299 retail. And they were trying to raise $250,000 for the creation of this thing, and they got like $9. So guess the marketplace didn't want it.
Yet the Pebble watch is like, you know, exploded, and
right.
There's some other things that are doing very well. It's interesting to see, you know, what kind of catches and what doesn't on Kickstarter.
Well, the Ouya is interesting because it's it looks sort of like a GameCube. It has a real game controller that looks similar to an Xbox controller. It's supposed to be $99, and it runs basically Android games like you'd run on your phone or your tablet. So you're talking about not, you know, $40 or $50 games. You're talking about $2 and $3 games running on your television set. So I think there's a big market for something like that. And what they've raised in funding up to date, you know, over $3 million kind of bears that out.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, well, we wish these guys luck. They're only trying to raise, Conquer is only trying to raise $25,000, so it's fairly modest. And at the rate they're going, maybe they'll get enough right out of the Twin Cities here to get them close anyway. I see Robert Weber threw in $500. So
Hangout just frozen?
Good on him.
Yeah, well, he wants to see this stuff work.
Yeah, really. Yeah, he has a company that is very much involved in gaming.
Yep.
WGI. So yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
You mean, well,
mine did. Mine did too, but I have, you know, hardly any bandwidth out here. So.
Yeah. No. The video's frozen. So if you're watching on video, and I'm sorry about that, at least we'll have an audio of the podcast.
Yeah.
The other topic, while we wait for Robert to join, and I'm not sure, I haven't seen anything on email here, so I'm not sure if he's having trouble with his setup, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the iPad rumors that came out really last week, and those are basically that they're going to do a 7.8 inch screen version, probably at $299. And this seems to me to be something that Apple is good at, where they're just going to completely saturate and dominate the market like they did with the iPod earlier, and have something at every price point for everybody. But what do you guys think?
I've never seen the reason for a 7-inch, so I'm, yeah, it's like, I could care less. I find it interesting that Apple is going to do that. Tim, you were fairly sure that they weren't going to do that. So,
yeah, Tim's on record a few times saying it won't happen.
Yeah, I think I said it would never happen.
Yeah.
So yeah. So what do you think the ramifications of that are, Tim? A waste of time and money, or?
Well, no, it's if you look at the one of the things we put in the show notes, one of the links, a guy has done the math of taking an iPad 2 screen and scrunching it down to 7.8 inches and then figuring out that the resolution of the current iPad would work on that sort of screen. So the pixels per inch kind of thing. So you could actually scale iPad apps down and they would work just like they do a bet on a smaller screen on the new 8-inch iPad. So I think they would just do it for only one thing, which is they want to completely dominate that market. And we are starting to see traction with 7-inch form factors on the Android side, and they just kind of want to stop that, I think.
You think they can do it at $299? I mean, I was thinking it might be more like $249.
I think they'll do it at $299 because they're always looking to make money, and they do have a, the iPad 2 still on the market for $399. So there'd be a nice separation there if they did that.
You know what I was wondering about though is this going to be positioned as an iPad Mini, or is it going to be positioned as a big iPod Touch?
Well, I think it would probably be more of the smaller version of the iPad. I think it'll carry iPad branding, but we'll see. It might not even be true. These are all just rumors.
Yeah. You think you'll have a stylus with it?
No, absolutely not.
Yes, Phil, and there'll be a flash drive input on the side, and it'll have a big fold-in keyboard, and
I'm looking forward to the screen myself.
By the way, I should mention that I'm using a Microsoft Surface right now for this Google chat. So
you are not.
No, I'm.
You doesn't
not.
Exist.
No, I'm not.
No, because if you had early access to a Surface, then you would be able to afford a hotel that actually looks out over the ocean, not over the freeway.
In all seriousness, it was everything was booked. We wanted to be in the Gaslight, at the Marriott in the Gaslight, and because we get points on Marriott, so that's why we're here. But all the hotels were booked. I mean, people booked them, months in advance, and we booked in March. So otherwise, I would have an ocean view, Phil. And actually, with global warmer and climate change, whatever, this hotel will have one soon. About 15 years, this will be ocean view.
Mm-hmm. And Al Gore's house, we won't even talk about that one. Looking the ocean there. Hey, I got a text from Robert. We got problems. He said, hey, Skype me. My Hangout is not supported with so many people on. We should have tested with all four on.
Yeah.
He said iPad doesn't support large Hangouts, so he must not have his MacBook with him. And what do we do now?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know how we could marry the two things together. I guess what we could do is we could drop the Hangout, and then we could do the talk with Robert on Skype and then marry it all together at the end.
Yeah, we'll just go ahead and let's first talk a little bit about Hangout, because this we've been talking about doing this for a long time. So, what did you guys, how do you guys think it's working out as far as in this situation? Is it seems to be very much reliant on bandwidth on not on everybody's end high test functionality. For example, during the course of this particular cast, some functions have stopped working and then come back. Some frames have started freezing and then come back. So it's by no means a perfect system, but it's a lot slicker than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's slick, but I have this issue with quality. One of the reasons I love Skype and love Skype for larger conference calls is the fact that, you know, if everyone's participating with decent headsets and they know how to mute themselves and so forth, it can be a great experience. The bandwidth isn't that much of an issue and the quality is high. The issue that I've got with Google Hangouts is that most of the time you're like this, right? You're sitting and you're looking, you as the audience member are looking at the ceiling because the person has, you know, their laptop sitting on the desk. And so, you know, people don't really know how to use it and how to come across properly. And so most of the Hangouts that I've watched, even with people from Google, have been, you know, glitchy and they've had problems and they spend at least 5, 8, 10 minutes at the beginning doing housekeeping. Hey, Joey, I can't quite hear your audio. Can you, you know, and there, you know, so there's a lot of futzing around. And that's what I have the biggest issue with.
Yeah, but you could do this.
Yeah. And we are. Yeah.
Yarr.
You want to do your Johnny Depp impression.
So I think we should just do the upcoming events and our sign-off. And what I'll do is between now and then, we'll put in Robert's audio and I guess a slideshow of exciting pictures or something.
You know, right. I think it's simply, Tim, let's not make it too tough. Why don't we just say if you want to hear the conversation with Robert, just, you know, go down a little, the next notch and listen to the podcast.
Right.
Hey, good morning.
What a bunch of bullshit. Oh, it gets better. I just tweeted out. Not only can you not join a Hangout on air, I assume that's the kind that you set up. It's undocumented. It's not anywhere in the Hangout support page. And when you click on a link in Google's help under Hangouts on Air for support information on mobile devices, it's a dead freaking link.
Oh, my.
you should do a whole Minovate podcast on Is Google an Unreliable Lover?
Well, I think we all know the answer to that.
Yeah, we definitely know that there are T's.
The Google Voice still doesn't support short codes, internet, national texting, or multimedia MMS. It's like, I'm just so sick and tired of Google.
Can you stay half-baked?
Well, that gives other developers an opportunity in the marketplace to come up with applications that do those things.
Yeah.
But it's all right. We've got Glass working, so, you know, that's the important thing. We can't get our...
Well, that's the other thing, though. Those are clearly mobile devices broadcasting from mobile.
Yeah.
But they're cheating. It's a demo fail because they led everybody to believe you can do a Hangout with multiple people with a mobile device.
You can't.
You have to have a laptop to do it. But it's worse. Like, they don't document it. And the error message on there just says Hangouts aren't currently supported on this device. That's actually untrue because we did this test Hangout yesterday. So it's like they can't even get their error messages to be context specific.
Well, it at least works between two people. We know that. But I guess it doesn't work with the, did you say, Robert, the on-air feature was the problem today?
Yeah, because, you know, it makes sense, but it's like, I don't care that it doesn't work. I care that, like, they can't even get the error message right. Here's a simple if-then statement. If device not supported, tell the freaking user why. It just says Hangouts are not supported, which is not true because we did a Hangout yesterday. I can actually do a Hangout with up to 9 people like anybody else. But I can't broadcast it or participate because, you know, they're running that stream through a whole probably different server infrastructure to stream it to YouTube live.
Probably. Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
I have a low tolerance for this shit because this is all I do.
Yeah, really, they put out that app a little too soon. It just hit the App Store, the iPad app, just a few days ago, right?
Yep.
It looks great. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
but
it's beautiful.
You know, like their biggest demo at I/O was Hangouts on Air, and more people are on the web on mobile than they are on the web. So, you know, I don't know. It's very frustrating. But
yeah. Well,
I was going to say it's kind of ironic that you wanted us to do this Hangout and then you weren't able to join.
Exactly.
But
the reason reason is because I did two interviews last week. A guy, Clay Collins in Minneapolis, who has a marketing podcast, and Shane Mack, who's at Zarly in San Francisco. And it was the day the power went out last week, and it was 100 degrees, which I did verify that if you have a battery backup plugged into your cable modem and your airport Wi-Fi router, Comcast doesn't work on the same power grid as your home does. So if you have powered your cable modem, you can keep your internet up. And I did Skype chats, but the audio wasn't great because it kept being off sync and locking up the video a little bit. So I wanted to actually just compare. My guess is the performance of a Google Hangout is superior to Skype, actually.
Well, the bottom line is now that you're going to be in San Francisco, you could just drive down to Google and yell at them.
No, I'm going to do worse than that. I'm going to ignore Google. That's what I predict is going to happen. You know, it's the same thing. I mean, I was all in on Google. I was all in on, Google Docs. I was all in on Latitude, the location space. I was all in on Google Notebook, and they shut that down. It's like, you know, if you're Google, you can't, you've got to keep innovating and adding the features. Like, I'm on Blogger. I know, like, Julio Zapata and a lot of other people, they just yesterday turned on migration for Google Apps. But they still haven't merged Google, people who are on Blogger who have been loyal to them. I'm fine to have my Blogger pretty much be, you know, merged into Google Plus as a blogging platform, but they still haven't done that yet. And it's kind of like, screw your stupid little glasses, like, get your existing product line up to snuff.
I think that's the point. It's like, you know, before you start innovating, let's make sure we got everything working. So before you move on.
I think that Larry Page, since he's taken over as CEO, has tried to focus the company a lot more than they were. And unfortunately, some of these products have been either cut off or de-emphasized.
And I think that's great. I'm glad he's bringing in that focus, you know, but... Here, did you all just see that text I sent on the chat?
Yep, works.
Oh, okay. Okay, so.
So,
what do you want to talk about? First, Robert, let me jump in. You're out in Seattle now?
I'm in Seattle. You know, I'm a board member of Minnesota Public Radio and American Public Media, which is NPR's kind of national, programming arm. And I'm at the Public Media Directors Marketing Conference. So it's like the people who do all the fundraising for the public TV stations and radio stations. I'm their keynote speaker, and I'm on stage in a little over an hour here. I flew in yesterday, and I'm just here for today.
Well, thanks for taking the time out. Yeah, well, and at least you got us doing a Google Hangout. I mean, we've been talking about doing it. Mm-hmm. You spurred us on to try it, and hopefully we can do it more in the future. But anyway, hey, bring us up to date on beyond what you're doing out there on your move to San Francisco. What's the latest?
Well, the books are packed. Half my clothes are boxed up. I could give you an inventory. I've got some fine electronic items for sale. I'm having a garage sale. You know.
Oh, you are?
Wait a minute. You are having a garage sale now? We want to know the address.
At this rate, there probably won't be a garage sale on August 4th because I've actually been, you know, that's what we geeks do. We use the events in our lives to try the newest apps.
Right.
So there is an app called Yard Sale, which is very interesting. It's a new startup. It appears to have solved the Craigslist posting simplicity problem, which is Craigslist is a freaking text UI nightmare. There's an app called Yard Sale, which is beautiful and simple and easy, and you do not need a Craigslist account to post to it, and it kind of creates one for you. So if you want to sell, like I got a bunch of shit in my old house. I'm not going to need all this stuff. Like, I've got a giant industrial fan, you know, one of those stupid things that men buy when they go to Home Depot that they use once. So I sold it to a guy, you know, and I want to try it out, how these apps work. And, you know, if that's one of the big things. If you've got a bunch of stuff, how do you get rid of it? I'm, like, excited to use Square. I mean, when I was a kid, grab sales are fun to me because, you know, you're interacting with the public and you're cutting deals and
it's not like
you're going to make a lot of money, but the technology available for us. I'm actually having signs printed up with balloons on the street corner. I'm using Google Maps to figure out where to put the signs. You know, I'm going to put the Square logo on there. I'm going to actually have big ass Visa American Express logo, you know. And most people that even, you know, like there's a guy in town in Minneapolis, he actually created the iGarage Sale app. I first heard about it when he gave a talk at Minibar. And so, you know, just this, the technology to do your own pop-up garage sale is rather sophisticated. So, but at this rate, though, I've been using Yard Sale. I've been selling it virtually. So the idea of actually having an event where you have a bunch of people trampling all over your lawn is perhaps almost going to be obsolete. So,
well, I need to know, Robert, are you going to have a Genius Bar in your garage if you do have a physical one?
No, all sales are final. No extended warranty. I'm not offering any extended warranties. But the plan is, all systems are go August 4th. I just get rid of, power drills and chairs and a few other things. I'm only taking 4 pieces of furniture to my new house. And these are kind of special furniture. Everything else I'm, because I've got an old Victorian, that's 135 years old in South Minneapolis. And, you know, my kids are like, Dad, do we have to have like our house looking like a museum when we go to California? So, you know, because mine kind of looks like my house looks like Masterpiece Theater on the inside. It actually is like the last thing you'd expect it to look like. I actually have a red silk smoking jacket, and there's an old musty wood library with a secret bookcase to a liquor cabinet. I mean, you know, but August 5th, I'm hiring Chef Shack to park in my driveway, and I'm going to have like beer and wine and say goodbye to my neighbors. And then on the 6th in the morning, my daughter and I hop in my car and we have to drive my French bulldog to California because you can't fly certain pug-nosed animals on airplanes because of the pressurization risk. So I'll be settled in August by like, you know, August 10th or so.
Yeah.
And then I'll be one of those people starting to tweet beautiful photos of San Francisco weather while y'all are suffering in the Midwest.
Yeah, right.
And it's not the snow or the cold that bothers me. It's the goddamn humidity. I cannot take this heat.
Yep. I know what you mean.
Well, I'm out here in San Diego, and our bus driver told us last night, we're coming back from the event, that these we're here during monsoon season, and there are 2 weeks of humid weather. And of course, this is a joke for humidity compared to everything else. But out here, you know, they've got, you know, 50 weeks of perfect weather.
Yeah, except for the fog in the morning. But yeah,
easiest job in the world is weatherman in San Diego, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what they say. But anyway, Robert, hey, tell us what are you going to be doing? I mean, obviously you're getting your daughter in school and stuff like that. But from a professional standpoint, what's going to be starting to keep you busy out there?
I'm not worried about getting myself busy right away. You know, it's like being, you know, Geek Squad just turned 18 years old. And, you know, if you're married or dating somebody for 18 years, the last thing you really should do for your mental health is start bar hopping the day after you break up and trying to pick up people. I think what you should do is you got to take time for yourself. You've got to, otherwise, too, that you might fall back into the things that you're good at. Hmm. And, you know, when I moved to Minnesota 23 years ago, it was January 1st, 1990. I mean, I packed up the clothes on my back and drove to Minneapolis. I later got my car repossessed because it was a brand new 1989 Toyota Celica, the first car I ever bought with my own money. And had to have that repossessed because I couldn't afford it. And I got a room for $200 a month. With 8 other guys in Dinky Town on the campus of the University of Minnesota. And I ate ramen noodle and, you know, 89-cent Reese's microwave burritos for 4 years. And but it's fun to be a freshman again. It's fun to go to a town because when you live in the town where your family and friends are, it's very comfortable. And you don't really know what you're made of. And most people experience it maybe when they go away to summer camp for a week. When you are on a bus, like I was to Ontario, Canada from Chicago for 13 hours, with kids you've never met before. And then you find out, are you the natural born leader? Are you the funny guy? Are you the critic? Are you the troublemaker? I think, you know, when you go to college, you have this experience again, or maybe high school, where, again, you're away from home and you find out what you're made of. And so, not that I'm addicted to it, but you really should have a good midlife crisis about every 10 years. And that's what I'm about averaging. And in five years, I'll be an empty nester. My youngest goes to college. So I'm kind of accelerating my midlife crises to about every 5 years. So my plans are, one, to get the family settled, take time to just there's so much going on right now. The risk for startups and people in their careers is that they won't focus. Brands, if they're going to be great, have to pick a point of view and focus. And unlike even Google's having this problem, Facebook has to focus on mobile because, you know, their entire interface was built into a 2004 desktop-centric web paradigm. And so I've actually been spending the last 3 months in Minneapolis. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, as you know, Wiseacre's revenues have gone up 2x because I'm saying goodbye to everybody, which is funny because the act of saying goodbye over 3 months has generated now, I've got at least 60 lunches and dinners scheduled already in San Francisco with people I've never met before. So I'll be spending the first 6 months just eating.
An Epicurean delight, yeah.
Well, you know, people have told me, because one of my goals is to like live in Paris, just because it's an awesome city. You know, I'd love to live in Istanbul and London. And they always say about Paris, and some people have said this about San Francisco, it's very insular, it's hard to get to know people. That's bullshit. You know, you just got to get out there. You know, I told my wife, join a book club, you know, join a yoga studio, like get out there and meet people. So while I know a lot of people in the Bay Area, I don't have any family there except for like one niece. But you just got to, you know, like you guys, you know, you got to get out there and do interviews and go to conferences. You know, the same thing, nothing has changed for my blog post, which is, you know, service, technology, culture, and brands. And I would argue, actually, though, that encompasses just about every company on the planet.
Yep. Yeah, cool.
Well, listen to, you know, Robert, you know, you spent a lot of time, and you mentioned Geek Squad is 18 years old. You spent a lot of time building that company. Obviously, it's in the hands of somebody else now. And, you know, we had recent news of layoffs in the Geek Squad. You give us your take on that, but also on a broader standpoint, you know, do you ever really let go of the first company? Is that just kind of like your firstborn? Are you always sort of looking back and judging, you know, what's been going on or what is going on? Or can you let go?
Of course I am. Look at Michael Arrington. I mean, you know, he still checks into AOL TechCrunch. I think that's because secretly he probably has a non-compete and he has obligations. He probably has AOL stock. But you bet your butt he constantly is obsessing over TechCrunch. It's his baby. And even if you're not the founder, you know, what you really want is your employees to take that same kind of ownership. So I will always be judging Geek Squad. I will always be ready to buy it back should, you know, Best Buy or anybody else, you know, befall hard enough times where they try, you know, I brought it to Best Buy because they're actually never going to sell it. If anything, Geek Squad might sell Best Buy one day because, you know, Best Buy is of one model, and you know, I don't think anybody expects Best Buy to launch their own ebook reader and online digital movie streaming service. You know, it's possible, and perhaps they probably should have done that 10 years ago. But Geek Squad's growth is independent of a physical set of stores. Geek Squad is a service. Mm-hmm. Geek Squad actually operates on four channels: phone, store, web, and home. And Geek Squads have had layoffs for years. You just only paid attention to this one. I can't speak to the larger layoff. I don't know how many people Best Buy laid off, but they've done that before. And frankly, you know, there's good turnover and bad turnover. The question is this a sign of like trouble in the house? I don't read it that way at all. I think most of the layoffs in Geek Squad is about 600 people. That's out of 25,000. It's in Madrid. It's in London. It's in Mexico. It's in Canada. But they've had layoffs for years in Geek Squad. For example, Best Buy had 15 service centers when Geek Squad came in. Geek Squad now operates all those service centers, but they've reduced them down to 8, while the business has grown immensely. So that's, in a way, while it's tough for some people, it's good for the business where you have to get more efficient, you know, so the service centers. The growth, though, some of those people who are being laid off from the in-home business, which is the physical act of making the house call, so a lot of those people are being hired into remote. So the other way to look at this, too, though, is what's the fastest growing channel? Well, what do you think the future is of urgent care centers? Is the future people driving to an urgent care center being in those germ-infested waiting rooms with all the people wheezing and coughing? Or would you rather plug into Skype or a Google Hangout with a doctor for $18, kind of like Minute Clinic? I think we'd all agree the future is remote diagnostics for healthcare. Well, I think the same thing's going to happen in technology support. What is growing is the remote. And if you told me that over the years that work would be shifted from the cost of driving a vehicle, going to someone's home, and you could replace it, humans actually prefer non-human contact if it's done well. We prefer to get our own boarding passes than go to a ticket agent. So I think that will fluctuate. What will grow in terms of physical in-home? I think home automation will grow, but the industry hasn't been kicking out the cool products. Only just recently, I think, did Apple start carrying that new, I don't even know what it's called, Mego or something like that. It's like, you know, it's a little plug you put in the wall and you can control the light switch with your iPhone. I think, you know, home automation and robotics will be more physical in-home, but we're some years off from that. Part of Best Buy's problems, while self-inflicted, and they admit that, and nobody disagrees with that, part of the problem is the industry. Mm-hmm. Nokia didn't do their job. They did not keep up on the Scandinavian culture of design. They thought they were a phone company. They forgot that, you know, Sony is near death. Nintendo posted its first loss in 30 years. Microsoft is doing an about-face to their entire partnership network where they get 95% of the revenue. Google now, while touting open and rubbing it in everybody's faces, is not only abandoning total openness, but the company that they're building their own tablet with isn't even Motorola, the one they paid $12 billion for. Now, the real question is, if Best Buy were doing layoffs with 5 other strong competitors, then I would say absolutely be worried. Mm-hmm. But there's not even one other Geek Squad. Why isn't there any other Geek Squad? I mean, come on. If Geek Squad is such a brilliant idea and it works so well, why aren't there 5 of them? And the answer is, it's hard. It is super hard. And so... my take on that.
Let me ask you something it's a question that I've been sort of pondering as of late. Give me your take on the concept of, do you see that, does innovation today create jobs, or does innovation today eliminate jobs?
Both. Sometimes you've got to knock off the old porch before you can build the new one, or to start over. The question is how do you innovate? You know, because there's different kinds of innovation for different scenarios. You can't just grow infinitely. You know, that's called cancer. Is Best Buy going to attempt to grow to 10,000 stores? On one hand, you could, but you'd have to say, how large would those stores be? They might be super tiny, might have a pop-up retail. What you have to do is you have to experiment and fail fast. There's two kinds of innovation. You could call precision innovation, where you calculate, you use Eric Ries lean startup methods, and you know, you do all your metrics and all that kind of stuff, and you're precise. But the more obvious one I think we all look at is, you know, I guess kind of like Google's. I guess you could say Apple and Google represent two political systems of thought around innovation. If you believe that the universe was created by an intelligent designer, who has set your life in motion and has a purpose for you, then Apple is really like a Chinese system of government, centrally planned, but stable. And, you know, infrastructure get worked. If you understand the concept of natural selection and random mutation, where many life forms exist, and while some species die off, the overall life proceeds. That's Android. You know, and Windows will probably emerge as some hybrid of the two. The more consistency design, i.e. the Metro UI, with, you know, more of the interoperability in a partner network like Google. So I think it's different things for different companies, depending on what stage that they're in. You know, there's the innovation you do when you're healthy. One could argue Best Buy probably should have used the billions of dollars of profits 10 years ago, not to get into China, but to get into digital.
Mm.
But is anybody surprised that a company that was rewarded very well from Wall Street for opening 1,000 stores, they only had 200 stores in 2000. They opened up 1,000 stores in the last 10 years. Of course the stock price is going to go up during that time. And as soon as they stop building stores. So when a species gets rewarded for one type of activity, that's where vision of a CEO has to come in and say, no, we have to invest for a potential future. And that's, you know, there's theories that I have on how innovation happens. That's what I think I plan to introduce to the world that you're not going to see from other entrepreneurs who are serial entrepreneurs. It's like, They know how to start a life form, but they don't know how to evolve it into other stages. It's a totally different thing once you get above 50 or 100 employees. Try 25,000 or 150,000. And how do you innovate within something like that? I actually think obviously there's diminishing returns.
Mm. Well, Robert, last time you were on, you talked about being the kind of the genius bar for Google Android as sort of being one of the things that Best Buy could do. And since then, there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week that talked about their new slimmed-down storage design that's taken a lot of cues from Apple. What do you think of that? Do you think they're on the right track?
I don't really think they're taking their cues from Apple. I mean, of course, one could argue everybody is. Microsoft's taking their cues from Apple. You know, I mean, did you ever think you'd see Steve Ballmer on stage? I mean, the guy talks out of his ass.
Did you ever want to see Steve Ballmer on stage?
He dismisses the iPhone in 2007. You know, he gets paid to basically, you know, defend Microsoft at all costs, even at the expense of the truth. I mean, you know, the fact that he can say that shit with a straight face, you know, oh, we're not going to cede any ground to Apple now. Oh, yeah, after 6 years, whatever. Did you ever think you'd see Google, you know, embrace anything less than total openness? But they've got fragmentation, right? I mean, what is it? Less than, you know, 5% of all Android devices are running even Ice Cream Sandwich. So, you know, yes, everybody's taking cues from Apple. But, you know, Geek Squad was around before the Genius Bar. Geek Squad was around 6 years before that. And, you know, before Apple launched the Genius Bar, Geek Squad was inside Best Buy. But nobody's written that. I think now the question is, and the right criticism is, you know, I don't even think Best Buy is telling anybody, hey, this new store design that looks more white and flat and open is going to solve their problems. Like, I'll give you some metrics that I would call things to watch for. How many clicks does it take to purchase something by channel? Now, this is one of the ideas I'm thinking about doing. I had this idea for this thing called the Book of Benchmarks. And the Book of Benchmarks comes up with some universal method by which to measure the efficacy of an experience by channel. So if you want to buy and rent a movie, by title, because you have to, because Netflix doesn't stream every movie, how many clicks does it take to watch a movie on Netflix? How many clicks does it take to set up an account on Netflix? Versus how many clicks does it take to go to Redbox kiosk? How many clicks does it take to go to a Best Buy or Best Buy Online, by channel, phone, store, web, and home? If I want to order a TV over the telephone, how many steps and how many minutes and how many dollars does it take? Now imagine a matrix that compares that by channel, and not just physical retail. You know, if I want a 50-inch TV, how long will it take? So the one of the true measures is if you walk into a brand new design Best Buy, how many minutes does it take to schedule an in-home house call? Can you do it via an app? And this is what I think is one of the major disruptions going on. You can order a pizza from Domino's or Papa John's on a mobile device. It will remember your last orders. It will remember your payment method. It lets you save custom pizzas. It lets you check the status of those orders in real time. Your pizza is being built by John. Your pizza is going into a 700-degree oven. Your pizza is now in the car of a teenager breaking all local speed limits to bring that pizza to you. When pizzas get FedEx-type real-time tracking, what's happening, I believe, is that the consumer and the executive years ago did not have the chops to criticize or judge a technology because they didn't know. But consumers and now executives who are carrying iPhones in their pockets are beginning to be trained by apps to teach them what's possible. And now when they sit in the boardrooms and the IT comes in and says, here's what we should do, the CEO now can go, wait a minute, that's bullshit. Why can't I check the status of my repair on my cell phone? Why don't you call me automatically when you're running behind? Why do I have to check in on you? That's going to be the true measure of all retail experiences, not just Best Buy. And what's happening now is that consumers are getting smart. They can scan prices, but beyond even showrooming, they're becoming aware of what's possible. And then they're going to begin to compare that, saying, wait a minute, I can order a pizza from Domino's with a text message. Why can't you let me self-schedule? Why can't I check in my Dyson vacuum cleaner from home so I don't even have to wait? The idea of a cash register. Should they even have cash registers anymore? Should there even be a customer service desk? I would argue, should you even have a Genius Bar? Versus everybody is the customer service department.
So what about the recent news about some conjecture about Amazon doing same-day delivery?
Oh, I think, yeah, and he said it's going to be the death of retail. It's whenever you hear the phrase the death of anything, I smell bullshit. I smell hyperbole. I also smell opportunity. Listen, it's like when the CD-ROM came out, everybody said, "Up, it's the death of the printed book."
Yep.
Well, we're just now beginning to see that, but that was 25 years ago. So, yes, is Facebook worth $100 billion? On a long enough timeline, yes, Facebook will go out of business. But if you missed the 30-year stock rise or whatever, you're an idiot. Yes, you're right. On a long enough timeline, everybody will die. But you've missed an entire life. You know, when the DVD came out, everybody said, oh, that's the death of the movie theater. Nobody will go out anymore. And now I get a bunch of people at dinner parties. It's getting really tiresome to talk to people about, like, they think Twitter is all about narcissism. They think the fact that we're broadcasting our conversation right now is about narcissism. No, it's about efficiency, because I get more business from people hearing my interviews freely broadcast on the internet, and it makes more connections. So I think it's not the death of anything. When Expedia and the travel websites came out, did it kill the travel agent? It killed the weak ones. Will Amazon same-day delivery kill all retail? No, it will kill the retailers that deserve it. Did Walmart kill the mom-and-pop store? No, mom-and-pop killed the mom-and-pop store. Sloppy merchandising, dirty aisles, smelly bathrooms, and rip-off pricing. Mom and pop had their shot. They gave the business away to Walmart. And the physical retailers have been giving the business to Amazon. If customers are fickle, they'll drop Amazon and go back to physical retail once physical retail begins to beat them at a different kind of game. I think same-day delivery not only is awesome, but it's actually going to improve retail, because Amazon, until you're threatened with extinction, do you begin to really question all the assumptions. So Amazon is the best thing to happen to physical retail in one sense, if you're an adventurous person.
Well, Robert, maybe we'll kind of close off with talking about the personal data explosion here. And I wanted to touch on, you know, the whole notion of, you know, the customer being in charge, and with people, using mobile so much now and so forth. You know, and by the way, we have this event coming up here in Minneapolis, the Data Venue event, which we're just going to miss you. You're going to be heading to San Francisco just prior to that. But you know, we're going to have Doc Searles here speaking about the intention economy, when customers take charge. And you're involved in a company that's been written about, and people are aware that you're an investor, I think, in Singly. They're based out in San Francisco. Can you say a few words about what they're doing and what your involvement has been with them?
Well, actually, it was a visit to the Twin Cities by Doc Searles himself to Best Buy. Whenever he comes in town, Best Buy tries to host him because obviously he's such a great thinker. And he was talking about VRM, or vendor relationship management, the idea that instead of consumers being managed, the future is customers managing vendors. Mm-hmm. And that was his idea. And he mentioned, he's like, if you're interested in this area, because as soon as he mentioned the concept, I absolutely glommed onto it and agree 100% that it is one of the biggest trends. As a result, if you believe that sensors and mobile and big data will be generated by billions of apps and cloud computing, there's the opportunity. Retailers don't want to violate people's privacy. They really want to personalize the experience because they need to. It's why Best Buy wants a Geek Squad. They want to differentiate. They know that the margins are falling because of commoditization and cheap manufacturing. But the infrastructure isn't there. The consumers want to be personalized. They don't, none of us like, don't you hate it when you call a company that you're loyal to and then you have to give all this information and then they transfer you and you have to give them your life story again?
Oh, God, yep.
Right. So that's the power of vendor relationship management, where the consumer can release information to get what they need, to even automate experiences, yet keep them highly personalized. And Doc mentioned Jeremy Miller, who's one of the founders of Singly, who's very well respected as the creator of the XMPP and Jabber protocols. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely followed them. You know, the risk for Singly is, you know, whoever's first isn't always the best or the biggest. But he's got a pretty solid team. I'm bullish on them. John Battelle, Federated, is an investor there and stuff like that. And I'm a really tiny investor. I mean, I'm more interested in advising with them. I'm more interested in who's building on their platform. But they're like the first platform that let platforms talk to platforms.
Yeah.
And I think now the tension will be consumers, the tension will be very similar as it is to like retirement accounts. Certain, fiscally conservative people have this, I think, somewhat naive notion that everybody in society can just be total grizzly Adams living on their own in the wilderness and is totally self-sufficient. That's not how it works. You know, it's much more social. And the problem managing, and they think that everybody could just have private retirement accounts. I think we've all seen the risks of that. It's always about a balance. And the government shouldn't do all the management of it, but what is needed is some kind of agency to manage the complexity of your portfolio, and hence the need for fidelity. I think Singly will enable bank type, instead of banks that hold money, banks that hold information securely.
Mm-hmm. Now, sure.
So you know, there's millions of preferences that could be generated about you across all your apps and interactions. Singly offers the idea that you could house them in one place, and you know. And I'm not talking about, because, you know, I think we all have a little worry about Facebook and trust. You know, they just converted everybody's email addresses. I mean, that shit is going to kill Facebook. They're so stupid for doing that. I can't believe Zuckerberg allowed that to happen.
Yeah, really.
And, you know, but think of the privacy relationship with your phone. That's different. Your phone's not like Facebook, yet it has all that same kind of preference data. Singly might enable your ability to give that to a hotel, but then retract that data when you leave the hotel. And that's what's not possible today. And that's what's exciting with them. And it's a hint of a whole host of things. But it's a very complex problem. But at the end of the day, the reason Singly will do well is because humans are lazy. They have limited attention spans. They have limited time to you know, vote in all the right elections and do all the research and manage all their 401k portfolios. And I believe there will be the fidelities of personal data that will help you manage that and get the most out of your own activity feed. Like one receipt detect that you bought the Mac Retina Pro laptop and that the 30-day return window is about to come up and remind you. That's the hint of the kind of things you'll see.
Cool. Yeah, well, we're looking forward to having them at this upcoming event, Data Venue, on August 7th and 8th. And we sure wish you luck going off to San Francisco. And, of course, we hope you'll continue your role as an advocate for Minnesota Tech out there. Which
I absolutely will. The labor rates are cheaper in Minnesota, so if I start any company, it'll probably actually primarily be based in Minnesota. San Francisco, in some ways, is probably the worst place to start a tech company because, you know, they all...
Yeah.
And just ego-wise, you know, and so we'll see. I have no idea what's going to happen. That's what's so fun about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's a great new adventure for you, and we sure wish you all the best. And, you know, we'll be seeing you when we're out there, and hope you'll come see us when you come back.
Okay, guys.
From time to time, yeah. Thanks very much, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
Okay, take care.
Okay, so upcoming events. The only one that was added was a mini demo, which is coming up on the 26th. That'll be at 6:30. Their tickets are on Eventbrite. I signed up last night. I'm not sure if there's a lot of tickets left, but
I signed up this morning, but I don't know if they're still available. Let me look real quick because we can do that here.
Batches, so
16 tickets available right now. So I don't know if that.
Wow.
Are they putting them out in batches, Graham?
They tend to do that, do them in two or three batches because they just sell out so quickly otherwise. So there'll be more coming, I'm sure.
Yep.
They announce these things so late or so close to the date, too, you know, that people don't get a lot of warning. It just happens.
Yeah, this is actually a little bit more warning than we had on the last one. This is about 2 weeks.
Be.
I think the last one was like a week. So.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I added an event, an Energizing Open Innovation for Education, Business, and Government at the U of M Humphrey School.
Oh, nice.
That's on Wednesday the 25th, 1 to 5 p.m.
Huh. Be there, aloha.
Yeah.
With a happy hour at 5. Hey, you can't beat that. What's happy about innovation?
So Tim's excited about the happy hour.
Yay!
Hey.
Well, Graham's always excited about happy hour.
I didn't know they allowed drinking at the Humphrey School, but they must.
Must.
Good for them.
And Data Venue is coming up in August, the 7th and 8th.
Yes.
Carlson School.
Yeah. August 7th and 8th. The site is open and available for registration now, and the exciting agenda is still being finalized, so keep your eye on that one.
Okay.
So, listen, we'll end this Hangout, post it, but we'll also be posting our interview with Robert Stevens, which will be audio only via Skype. So look down there on the page and click to listen to the podcast.
Okay. All right.
And we'll see you next week.
Take care.
All right. So if you liked the Hangout, post a comment and let us know. And we'll see you all next week.
And we should point out this is a public Hangout. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's broadcast live.
That's why we got dressed for it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
I thought you didn't have pants on, Graham.
I don't. I'm in boxer shorts. And I'm
Don't stand up.
Yeah, don't stand up.
Oh, please. Oh, come on. Come on. No.
Yeah. Oh, no. No. Quick, cut it off. Cut it off.
Oh, God. Chat roulette. Here we go. All right. Take care, gents.
Wait, we'll see you next week on
Minovate Gang Podcast.
Bye-bye.